Hi, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here in Inside the Ropes, episode 38, the 38th week that we've been covering this. Now, in the first week that the SmackDown Summary was covered, I was not even part of the crew on SmackDown. It was Robert and Sandra who both threw their collective toys out of the pram. There was an emergency conversation that took place as I was walking down Sucky Hall Street in Glasgow to McDonald's. I had to call Sandra and convince her, please do this show. I even offered for her to leave the show if she wanted to. And she, of course, did what any good person in the Huff would do, which was say, I'm not leaving, but I'm not happy about it. I was like, okay, that's fine. And
well, I didn't want someone else to just like come in and take my place. Come on now.
Exactly. So you did what any good person in the Huff would do, which was say, well, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to allow me to be angry. I was like, okay, that's fine.
I just needed to be in a Huff for a little while. It was fine.
You did. And I just wanted to make sure you weren't going to be Shawn Michaels about it.
No,
I didn't want a lost smile or anything. So I had to, you know, you're an important part of the brand. So I had to call and make sure that we were okay. So,
and I appreciated that.
2 months later, Sandra fell in love with what originally was the shiteness of SmackDown, which became the kind of glory of SmackDown Live. And now we have a complete shake-up of the SmackDown brand. Now, before we talk about SmackDown, I want to just give you a brief opportunity to talk about some of the stars that have went to Raw. So I'm just going to name the stars who have left, and if you can just give me a brief sort of reaction to each person that's moved. Does that sound okay?
Okay.
Okay, so up first we have The Miz and Maryse.
I am devastated that The Miz and Maryse are gone, because The Miz and Maryse have, like, they've been kind of the high point of SmackDown for a long time, right? Like, when Miz says that he built SmackDown, and I mean, Talking Smack especially, has been Miz's show. And so not getting to see Miz and Daniel Bryan interact on Talking Smack anymore is very, very sad for me. I think Miz and Maryse are great. I'm curious to see what they do on Raw. I really hope they don't get lost in the shuffle on Raw. I don't think they will, because I think that they're too good for that, honestly. But I'm sad that they are gone. I am going to miss them significantly.
We went straight from The Miz and Maryse, who'd come out as John Cena and Nikki Bella, obviously. Now, is there a better portrayal in all of wrestling than Nikki Bella portrayed by Maryse? I don't know if there is.
I don't know if there is, because she is so good at that.
John! Oh, so good.
John!
The ring popped me so hard. It's so good. Then straight out the gate, right after Miz and Maryse came out on Raw, we got the WWE Intercontinental Champion Dean Ambrose. He's moved to Raw from SmackDown.
Huzzah!
Your dislike of him aside, how do you feel about, you had Dean Ambrose from July to April. Did he win you over in the end at all? And how do you feel about him going to Raw?
He won me over in the sense that I didn't groan whenever he came on TV. I thought, okay, now Dean Ambrose is here, that's fine. And sometimes I enjoyed the segments. But Dean Ambrose is still not my favorite, and I think Dean Ambrose matches are never going to be my favorite. So, I mean, I think Dean Ambrose has done very good work on SmackDown as of late, but I'm also not sad to see him go, because it feels more like, okay, now I'm starting to accept that Dean Ambrose is here and Dean Ambrose is a thing. And that's not to, like, discredit Dean Ambrose. I think he works really hard. I think he has been the workhorse of SmackDown. He's been main eventing the house shows. He's done a lot of work over the past, you know, however long it's been since the draft. I just don't particularly care for him as a performer. And I don't know where Dean Ambrose was going to go next on SmackDown. So moving to Raw, I think, is a good idea, and they're probably just going to try and reunite the Shield to get Roman over some more, and lol to that, basically.
I am, before I kind of give you my thoughts on those as well, I listened to our WrestleMania rundown on the plane on the way home, and short of the fact that I was so excited that I kept interrupting everybody, which I apologize for now, I didn't realize at the time, I thought that was one of our best podcasts we've ever done. And when we were talking about it, one of the things that I mentioned was, you know, Dean Ambrose, I was always waiting for, oh, maybe the next feud will make him the guy, or the next feud will make him the guy. And then you had said, well, I just gave up longer than, I gave up long before you did. And I think that's true to an extent, but I do think that of everybody who went, Dean Ambrose is the guy who, like, he'd done everything he could on SmackDown. He pretty much feuded with everybody. I think he's the one.
Well, I mean, he came into SmackDown as the world champion.
Yeah, he came in as WWE champion, and he had a run there. I think that he will benefit, and he needed the move the most. In terms of The Miz and Maurice, I'm worried about The Miz because I think on SmackDown, The Miz was a top guy, and I don't think on Raw he is going to be a top guy. I think he'll be like an upper mid-card guy. But I hope that they prove it wrong.
Like, I was really hoping that we were going to get Miz going for the WWE title at some point. And I'm bummed that we're not going to get that because, I mean, the Universal title is currently, you know, off on a farm with Brock Lesnar. So it's not like that one's going to be challenged all that much. And the only people who are going to get to challenge for the Universal title are, like, the very upper echelon. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just the way it is, right? Like, mm-hmm. on SmackDown, the world title is actually there. So people can challenge for it easier, which is probably why it's being challenged on a Raw pay-per-view now. Speaking of the next thing, maybe.
The next thing is Curt Hawkins goes to Raw. Now, I don't think anybody really cares, and Curt Hawkins going to Raw is really for Curt Hawkins. Well, you're baffling. But like,
I'm gutted because I will miss Curt Hawkins and his acts.
But the thing is, he'll do the exact same thing on Raw. True. It's not like you're going to lose anything that he does. He's just going to get beaten quickly by somebody on Raw.
But it doesn't give me the opportunity every week that he's on to be like, Kenny, I love Curt Hawkins, for you to go, you're baffling.
True. Let's just do it one more time for effect. Curt Hawkins, what do you think of him?
I love Curt Hawkins. He's one of my favorites. I've loved him forever.
Well, you're just baffling, Sandra. That's all you are.
Yay.
ITR nostalgia. Let's talk about the big one, because Finn Balor's in the ring, he beats Jinder Mahal, who's coming to spot. Anyway.
I know.
And all of a sudden, the Wyatt sounder goes and we have Bray Wyatt. This was the one that shocked me the most of any of the picks going to either side. As a huge Bray Wyatt fan, talk me through how you're processing this, because a lot of people during Raw were tweeting me and you, saying, like, is Sandra okay?
I feel like people thought I was ready to throw myself off a cliff.
Yeah, like, people were like, do you want that draft now? Like, people were convinced.
And I was like, no, I don't want that draft. I don't want to do the 3-hour show. But, yeah, so it's interesting because Jinder Mahal was on my computer screen and I don't like Jinder Mahal, so I decided to go to the bathroom during Jinder Mahal versus Finn Balor. And so I was washing my hands, and all of a sudden I hear the Wyatt sounder, because my bathroom's, like, right next to my bedroom, so I could hear it. And I was like, wait, what? This is the worst possible outcome of all time. And I ran back into the room, and I saw that Wyatt was on Raw, and he's saying, like, yeah, I'm here now, and blah, blah, blah. And I was just a mess of emotion, Kenny, because on one hand, Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor, that interaction is pretty cool. It's something that I've kind of wanted to see because, you know, the Demon versus whatever Bray Wyatt is these days, it could be pretty cool, right? But on the other hand, Bray Wyatt on Raw terrifies me because Bray Wyatt on Raw is not going to get the loving care and attention that SmackDown storytelling has to offer. And Bray Wyatt has already sort of devolved back into, ha ha ha, I'm laughing about my losses, and I'm the eater of worlds, even though we don't know what that means, and I still lose, and ha, whatever, like, ineffective Bray Wyatt status, right? We had this glorious time where he was actually the WWE champion of the world, and he had won a thing, and he was actually effective, and story was great, and it just renewed my love for Bray Wyatt, and now I sort of hate him for that. Because he's just evolving back into the same old thing. And I don't know how that's going to go on Raw. I hope that it goes well. I hope that maybe this is an opportunity for him to do something different. But I feel like that's what we always say about Bray Wyatt.
Is the best way for me to kind of like put it all into one thought. I just watched Total Divas, actually, which you're probably going to watch soon. I'm going to give you a little spoiler. It's not
that's
a big
fine.
One. But they're talking about Naomi and her entrance, you know, the Fuel the Glow entrance. This is her kind of like trying it out.
I've seen all the previews. Like, is she going to pull off this big entrance? I don't know, because I didn't just see it at WrestleMania.
Of course. But there's one point where Natalia sort of pepping her up about it. And she was like, they don't put the lights out in the arena for just everybody. There's only two people they do it for. And that's The Undertaker and Bray Wyatt. And the thing that angers you, which is the truth, is Bray Wyatt is so The Undertaker in so many ways.
They're very similar.
He is The Undertaker, but 20 years ago. If you think I'm wrong, when did Bray Wyatt debut on Raw? What, September 2013, August 2013, summer 2013?
Yeah, I think it was...
I know he did the thing with Kane.
July? Was it July? July or August?
So, yeah, he debuted in the summer of 2013. I'm just finding out the exact date here because it's going to annoy me if I don't find out. Where he ended up, let's see, because the vignette started in May and he debuted in the July 8th episode. So there you go.
Aha, I was right, July.
You were right. But, like, The Undertaker, when he debuted in 1990, he, 1 year into his reign, won the title for 4 days after beating Hulk Hogan. And then went back to being a mid-card guy for another 5 years before he won the title again and became a top guy again on when we were doing Retro Raw. So The Undertaker was pretty much had the Bray Wyatt career. You know, the only difference is that Undertaker won more matches than Bray Wyatt did, but The Undertaker was in an era where they were going through a lot of... Like, they didn't have any other real big names in WWF in the mid-90s. You know, they had Bret and Shawn and Razor and Diesel... And then Undertaker was number 5.
Yeah.
So, like, he was always one of the top 5, whereas in WWE, there are 10 top guys, even more sometimes. So Bray Wyatt, his career trajectory is following The Undertaker in a lot of ways. So I'm not as worried about him as some people are. I know some people are like, I think David was saying, this is the death of Bray Wyatt. And I get the annoyedness.
I mean, that's another thing we've said about Bray Wyatt before, though, right? Like, when The Undertaker just beat him and he didn't react to it, we thought that was the death of Bray Wyatt. We always think something's the death of Bray Wyatt, and then Bray Wyatt comes back. And then Bray Wyatt disappoints us again. But they always treat him as important, and I think it's something that you pointed out to me was, you know, who has he worked with at WrestleManias, or who has he worked with in his top programs? And he's working with the top stars. Like, they don't just put anybody with The Undertaker. And as much as that feud frustrated the hell out of me... The fact that they put him with The Undertaker does say something.
And it wouldn't shock me. Because remember, like, Paul Heyman told us this. The Undertaker gets one decision that he can make. But have I told this story?
I don't think you've told this on air. I don't think you've told it on air.
I think I have to now.
Yeah, well, you started it, so.
Yeah, fuck, okay. So we were talking to Heyman and I sort of said, you know... sometimes it baffles me that The Undertaker has these programs that maybe don't fully flesh out or that they're not as intricate as I think that a lot of the fans would like them to be. How does it work? And he said that from what he'd heard, Undertaker gets to choose the opponent every time. He can veto any opponent he likes. He can refuse anybody. He gets to pick the opponent. But the deal is, once he picks the opponent, he doesn't really get to decide the program. The program's then thought out by Vince and by creative. So by that account, Undertaker wanted to work with Bray Wyatt twice. So at least there's that to kind of take away from it. But at the same time, Vince, you know, just... And then also Bray Wyatt had the ankle injury, so maybe the WrestleMania match was going to be more interesting before that ankle injury. But I think the thing with Bray Wyatt's takeaway is that he is, like you say, he's working with all these top guys on these top programs, and he does need to win a top program soon against somebody, but they are treating him like a big deal. I think that he, it looks to me like he was basically the replacement choice of AJ Styles.
Yeah.
To go to Raw. So again, you know, they think of him in big company.
Well, I'm wondering if that was kind of a last minute decision, because the fact that he and Randy Orton are still having this match, the House of Horrors match, on now the Raw pay-per-view is kind of baffling. Like, it seems like they didn't really plan on one of them moving to Raw, necessarily.
Yeah, I don't think they did, but I think that it's smart to have the pay-per-view on the Raw pay-per-view. Smart to have the match on the Raw pay-per-view, because if you have the match on the Raw pay-per-view, you can kind of argue, well, Bray Wyatt is now a Raw superstar, so if he's going to have a title shot, it happens on the Raw pay-per-view. Whereas if they left it to the SmackDown one, you've got to wait all the way to May 21st. So right. The WWE title stuff is stilted for another month. Whereas if you get it out of the way on April 30th, it's done. But then you also have the added element. Now, this is not going to happen, but it's cool to think about, is with Bray Wyatt beats Randy Orton, the WWE title goes to Raw. So there's an element of that to it, which is interesting.
I'm curious if it would, though, because, I mean, we'll talk about the United States Championship situation in a little bit, but it seems like they drafted the United States Championship to SmackDown, like the championship, more than the guy. So I'm wondering if the same would go for the WWE Championship?
I don't think that they would get to draft the world titles. And even if they did, I don't think they would ever have, like, you know, if Bray Wyatt wins, he keeps the WWE title on SmackDown, and then the loser goes to Raw. Like, they would probably never
No, I was just wondering if Bray Wyatt would like have to come back to SmackDown or something if he won it. It's all kind of confusing, and it kind of makes the outcome of that match. I mean, it was already pretty predictable, but it makes it even more predictable.
It does. It is very predictable. I'm also curious to see what the House of Horrors match is going to be.
Oh, I am very fascinated.
So, up next, we had the news that everybody's been waiting for. Kalisto has been drafted from SmackDown to Raw.
Good.
Yay!
Good. And not just because, you know, Kalisto is a wee prick, but because this means that Kalisto can be in the Cruiserweight division.
Yes.
And that's exactly where he should have been from the beginning. It doesn't make any sense that he wasn't in the Cruiserweight division from the beginning. So I'm really hoping that's the plan.
You can ask my video man, Corey Milne, if you want. We were at the WrestleMania Media Day, and I said to one of the WWE guys, I was like, listen, I don't think I can interview Kalisto. And he was like, because Kalisto was like next in the queue. And he was like, why not? And I was like, because we have this little Twitter thing going on, and if I interview him normally, it's going to kill my cred. And he was like, he looked at me like I was an absolute buffoon, but I was like, fuck it, I'm not going to do it. So I said, you know, do you think if I just brought it up on air, he would be okay with it? And he was like, he doesn't seem that kind of guy. I was like, okay. So as soon as he came over, I was like, how am I going to approach this? Because he goes from one media to the next, to the next, to the next. So we're next. There's no way to get away from him. So I was like, what can I do? How can I get away from this wee prick? So as soon as he was finished, I just dropped to the ground like I'd been shot to tie my shoelace. Leaving Corey there to just look baffled.
I'm picturing the look on Corey's face, and it's pretty humorous to me.
And I stayed down there for what felt like a year until I heard Kalisto being welcomed on another show.
You didn't and then I tell me up. That. That's so funny.
Hashtag fuck Kalisto.
I just love that you did the whole, like, I don't know, like you're trying to avoid someone at a party, like you're trying to avoid some sort of ex or something, so you have to tie your shoe to avoid eye contact.
That's pretty much what it was. Kalisto and I, it's just never going to get better. But like, all the joking aside, I am glad that he now gets to be in 205 Live, because it's the only thing that he would be useful on. So, you know, there's that. But also, Apollo Crews was drafted to Raw. That was...
Yeah, that was announced like in the afternoon or something. I mean, fair enough, fine. He wasn't
arguably
doing anything on SmackDown, but
arguably the best pure athlete in WWE. Sondra, how do you feel about that statement?
They say that about like 12 people, but
Billy Gunn used to be the best pure athlete, and he still is. Look at Billy Gunn at 53.
No, Billy
shredded.
Gunn looks amazing at 53. But
I love that he was part of the Bullet Club when the New Japan Battle Royal made my life.
Was he really?
That's yeah, funny. Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like yeah I've not seen it, but that's funny.
They had like Liger and Billy Gunn and Scott Norton. And, oh, it was great.
That's bizarre. But yeah, I mean, Apollo Crews, I just hope they find something for Apollo Crews, and I hope he grows a personality somehow. Because, I mean, if he does the same thing on Raw as he does on SmackDown, it's just going to be nothing. So maybe something will click. I just really want something to click. I mean, Apollo Crews reminds me very much of one Rocky Maivia right now. And we're watching on Retro Raw Rocky Maivia's stilted ascension, I guess. And I never, like, if I were just watching Rocky Maivia, I never would have thought there was anything there. He is so boring. And I'm hoping Apollo Crews, not that he's going to become The Rock, but I'm hoping he finds something. And maybe shaking up the rosters will help.
Yeah, I think he needs a heel turn, but...
Yeah, I think we'll see. Does too. I mean, his friend Kalisto's there. Can he just, like, batter Kalisto around a little?
I mean, I'm going to be okay with that. I'm willing to let my personal friend Kalisto take some punishment from Apollo Crews to make the show better.
That's very generous of you, Kenny.
Thank you. Thank you. Heath Slater and Rhino are on their way to Raw from SmackDown. Sondra, you seem like one of the only people in the world that would care about this. So
I do care. Wax I'm
lyrical.
Bummed. I'm bummed that we haven't seen them on SmackDown a lot more than we have, because they've really barely been on SmackDown. So I guess they'll probably barely be on Raw now.
But they were like a one-note joke, and they were good at being that one-note joke. But
they were.
Like, it's hard when you have, like, Heath Slater had such a funny storyline trying to get a contract. But there was always going to be the problem of, like, when you get the contract, what do you do? It's like It's like when you have a guy who you really want to win a title, and you don't necessarily think he's going to be a great champion, you just really want to see that moment of him win. And then he wins, or she wins, if it's in the women's division, and there's just not really anywhere to go. And I think that the thing about Heath Slater and Rhino, the best thing that ever happened to them was becoming tag team champions, but the worst thing that ever happened to them was becoming tag team champions.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, I mean, just for me personally, and I said this in the WrestleMania thing, the tag team titles mean a lot to me. I think it hurt the titles having them being the champions, because I don't think that they came across in the League of American Alpha or in the League of the Wyatts or in the League of the Usos. You know, the Usos have had all these great matches with Harper and Rowan in the past, or Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, and then American Alpha had those amazing matches with the Revival, and the Wyatts had the great matches with American Alpha. There is no universe where I will believe that Heath Slater and Rhino were ever on that level, and I think that was what was difficult for me to accept.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I mean, I feel like they were tag team champions longer than anyone expected them to be, and mm-hmm. I don't think it was a mistake giving them the tag team championships, because I think that was a really cool moment, and Heath Slater got the contract, and I think that was one of the, you know, most overlooked stories of 2016, because I think it was one of the best stories on SmackDown. Like, the Miz's story was probably better, but Heath Slater's, you know, free agent thing I think was really great, and I think we kind of forget about it now, but that was a really, really fun period of television, was watching Heath Slater try and get the contract. So
it was great.
It was great, and I feel like once they lost the titles, I wish that they could have done more in some sort of secondary story capacity. I think not having a secondary show for SmackDown, as weird as this sounds, like not having main event anymore almost kind of hurts people like Heath Slater and Rhino, because they don't have anywhere else to like build those stories. Because sometimes like the secondary stories, like when the Social Outcasts were on main event all the time, and it was really good, and I actually watched some of main event because I wanted to see the Social Outcasts and what they were doing, you know. And like on Raw, they have superstars, so they can have secondary stories. I don't know if they do. I don't watch it. I hear Curtis Axel and Titus O'Neil fight a lot, and boy, can I not be bothered. But sometimes those secondary shows are good for acts like that. For people like Breezango, too. Like, I really wanted to see a Heath Slater and Baby Rhino versus Breezango feud, because it would just be quirky. It wouldn't have to be anything that you pay a lot of attention to, but it would just be fun. And it would have been a lot better than Kalisto and Dolph Ziggler and Apollo Crews love triangle or whatever they were doing.
Yeah, I think the best thing they could have done, excuse me, was... Sondra and I are both sick, by the way. Sondra more so than me. So Sondra is trying her best not to cough, and she always beats herself up far too badly if she ever does cough. Because, my God, she's sick. She may cough. Sorry.
It's happening. I've had to mute my microphone a couple times already.
So see, if I don't talk for a little while, my voice just clogs up. So I start talking like this. So that sometimes will happen. But, and plus, I don't care enough to hit the mute button. I'm sorry. You get me as you get me. But, I think the best thing that could have happened to them was Heath Slater and Rhino winning the titles and losing them on the SmackDown after it. That would have been my... Because I think that would have been a great story. Of like,
yeah.
They won, but they're not quite in the league, so they don't get it anymore. But I get that Heath Slater was one of my highlights of 2016. I thought he was great.
Yeah. And I mean, SmackDown took him out of like nothing, like doing nothing, and made him a champion. And I believed it for a little bit, you know? Like, I really like Heath Slater a lot, and I think he's been...
Do you know what? What? It was so bad that even you were like, don't know if I buy this anymore. Like, it got to the point where even you were like, maybe they should lose this soon.
Yeah, that's never a good sign, right? Because I am willing to believe pretty much anything.
Just like when there's an 8-man tag team match with the Hardys, Cesaro, and Sheamus against the Club and the Shining Stars, that the Drifter, Elias Samson,
yes,
decides to walk out. Just
yes.
Say what the fuck you want.
I love the Drifter, okay? Like, I've actually liked the Drifter for quite a while. I was bummed when the Drifter got injured on NXT, because I had just started to kind of fall in love with him and his shit antics, because he's so hateable. Like, the Drifter and Eva Marie were the two to get most booed in NXT. And, like, actual booed. Like, they hated the Drifter. They hated Eva Marie. It was like old Bo Dallas heat, right? Like, just go the fuck away. And I like the Drifter, so I was glad when the Drifter came back, and when he had that Loser Leaves NXT match with Cassius Ohno, I was like, this is going to be interesting. And then, because the Drifter didn't already have you know, my heart, the Drifter needed to win everybody over by becoming El Vagabundo the next week, which I'm so bummed that I missed because I was on my way back from Chikara, so I didn't actually see the NXT taping before TakeOver. So I could have seen El Vagabundo live. Like, I was nearly there, but he came back as El Vagabundo. It was hilarious. Great NXT segment. You guys should all check it out. And I love the fact that the Drifter is literally just drifting onto Raw. Did you see him during the Nia Jax and Charlotte match too?
I did.
Yeah, he was in the crowd. I didn't see it initially when the match was going on because I wasn't paying that much attention, but I saw online people posted a GIF of it. I think it's great. I want him to just drift around Raw for a long time and not say anything. Actually, I was talking to our friend Daniel Morris yesterday. I think the Drifter should drift all around WWE for a while. I think he should drift onto SmackDown. I think he should, you know, retroactively drift onto Total Divas. I think he should drift onto Unfiltered with Renee Young. I think he should just be in the background and kind of be the free agent that Heath Slater was. I think that's how they should bring him in. I think it'd be super fun.
Anything that avoids me having to watch him wrestle, I'm all for.
He's fine wrestling, though.
Oh, he's bland. He's like, I mean, you're the wrong person to have this conversation with because, again, you're weird. But, like, he's the sort of person that would, he's like the wrestling version of a dry rice cake.
Well, yeah.
Like, you just go, oh, I mean, it's just, there's no taste to it. It's just,
but if the character's there and if you hate him and if you're like, drift the fuck away, then you want to see him get beaten up.
I don't mean drift the fuck away in terms of, like, I want to pay to see him get beat. I mean drift the fuck away as in, please wrestle somewhere else.
Oh, see, I want to see him get beat. I love him.
Oh, God. Okay, women's division. Final thing to talk about of the trade. I love that we're doing about half an hour here of just trade talk. I think people want to hear it, so
yeah. Fine.
We have Bayley and Sasha in the ring. Sasha is about to challenge Bayley for the women's championship when Alexa Bliss comes out. We all kind of thought she was going, but how do you feel about Alexa Bliss leaving and going to Raw?
I mean, I'm bummed to lose Alexa Bliss because I really like Alexa Bliss, but I think she'll do well on Raw. And Alexa Bliss versus Bayley is a really good match that I've seen multiple times, and I would love to see it again with their new dynamics. So I'm not angry at it or anything, and I think the trade that we got instead makes a lot of sense.
And then that was going to be it. She was putting all the SmackDown drama behind her, and then Mickie James' music hit, and Mickie James is also going to Raw from SmackDown.
That surprised me.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I think I was talking to you at the time, and I was like, what the hell? Why Mickie James too? The only issue I have with that is that Mickie James is one of the, you know, most seasoned wrestlers that we had on SmackDown, and I think that's where SmackDown is lacking. Like, SmackDown needs some really good wrestlers to work with some of the more up-and-coming wrestlers, although I guess Raw needs that in some sense, because people like Dana need some assistance if they're ever going to try and become passable. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was bummed to see Mickie go. I guess it's sort of a continuity. I'm curious if they're going to still have beef between Mickie and Alexa. I don't know. I wasn't super angry, but I do like Mickie James, and I was looking forward to seeing more Mickie James, like, mix it up on SmackDown, but it's fine.
And after the show went off there, we found out that Byron Saxton was being traded for David Otunga on the commentary team.
This makes me so happy, Kenny. No more David Otunga on SmackDown.
I really like Byron Saxton.
I really like Byron Saxton, too. I've been a Byron Saxton fan for years and years and years. And I get a lot of shit for it, because everyone says that he sucks. But I don't think he sucks. I think he's good. And I think SmackDown commentary was much better this week.
He got much better. Like, the time that I think people were the most kind of like, oh my god, was when he took over the commentary on the post-WrestleMania 31 Raw.
That wasn't fair to him, though. They put him out there by himself, like, deer in the headlights. I mean, Byron's not a play-by-play guy. He's a color guy. Like, he's not
racist.
That's not racist. That's his job. But he's not...
Next you're going to call him the Dark Horse?
Fuck's sake. But he's...
I'm joking.
I know you're joking. Don't make me laugh. It makes me cough. But... Byron Saxton is really good as a color commentator who is that dork. Like, he's basically Carlton from Fresh Prince, right? Like, he's hilarious and dorky and weird, and I love him.
I really want to see him do the Carlton dance one day.
Have you never seen it?
No. Did he do it?
Yeah. I'll have to find it and send it to you.
Yeah, fine, it's sent to me. So that's all the trades, and I want to very quickly bring up something to you before we continue and talk about SmackDown and all of the trades and all that, and it's the Mauro Ranallo situation. Do you have anything that you want to quickly say about it before we move on?
Yes, I do.
There is a new element to it that I want to bring up when you're done.
Okay. And I've talked about this on Twitter, and I feel like everyone has been talking about it to death, so I don't want to go on for a long time, but the JBL situation is a problem, and JBL himself is a problem, but I don't think it's been a secret that JBL is an asshole. I think that I've heard stories of JBL bullying people for years, right? Like, this is not new news. I think the reason it caught on as news right now is because it came right at the same time that Mauro Ranallo suffered a bout of depression and had to take time off from work, which is now essentially leading to him leaving the WWE. I think that's a big loss for WWE because I think Mauro Ranallo is very good at what he does. And I think this is something that Mauro Ranallo has always wanted to do. Like, it was a dream job for him. So I think it sucks that JBL, you know, kind of instigated this bout of depression. And I don't know what all happened. I don't know the intricacies of it. Everyone's saying, like, JBL bullied Mauro into a bout of depression. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that Bring It to the Table segment was what caused Mauro to have, you know, a problem where he needed to take time off work. I don't know if it was specifically that.
Just kind of very quickly, I've never been bipolar, so I don't want to, like, cast aspersions, but I would assume that bipolar, that the sort of downward spiral of that, he was probably already in a place that was maybe going that way, and mm-hmm. the Bring It to the Table thing probably didn't. I would find it very hard to believe that that one Bring It to the Table thing was it.
Trying to get at. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there were other tensions, because when they were on commentary, I think part of the reason SmackDown commentary wasn't very good is you could hear JBL kind of bullying Mauro on commentary. Like, yeah. JBL is not always professional at the broadcast table. JBL has bullied Byron Saxton at the commentary table before. JBL would, like, give huge digs to Mauro Ranallo on air. And, you know, he says it's all in character and it's all supposed to be fun and it's all supposed to be fine and professional, but it doesn't come across that way. It really doesn't to me. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were already tensions there. And as someone who does suffer, I'm not bipolar, but I do suffer from depression, and I've had to take time off work for depression issues before in the past. And so it sort of strikes a chord with me because I've been there and it sucks. And to have this all happen so publicly cannot be easy for Mauro Ranallo. And I don't blame him for not wanting to go back to a toxic environment. I mean, other people have spoken about the toxic environment of WWE. But what I don't want people to think is that firing JBL is going to solve the problem. Because JBL is a problem. He is a part of the problem. He is being allowed to bully people. He is being allowed to be abrasive. He's being allowed to be a dick. But I think the culture of WWE really needs to be examined, because I think it starts at the top. And I think that this sort of culture is actually encouraged. I mean, there's been a hazing culture in wrestling forever. And I think you have to look at Vince McMahon. I mean, one of his favorite pastimes is throwing people in a swimming pool. Like, it's not that hard to figure out that Vince McMahon finds this kind of stuff hilarious. You know, like, I remember in the past, Michael Cole saying stuff about Lillian Garcia, like calling her a horse on air. And that comes from Vince, you know, like, Vince is in the headset. Vince thinks this stuff is hilarious. And I think what needs to be examined here is the culture behind the scenes of WWE and, like, actually get at the root problem. And I think that the Be a Star campaign needs to actually evaluate its relationship with WWE at this point and decide, because, I mean, WWE is really great for that organization. WWE gives them a lot of promotion. I'm sure it's a really great working relationship, but you need to examine these things. And I think that, I don't know, I think that internally WWE needs to make some changes there. And I think that JBL should be reprimanded for what he did. JBL was a lamb on this episode of SmackDown. He was so nice. You could tell he was being very intentionally not abrasive, especially. I was curious to see how it was going to go with Byron Saxton on commentary with him, because he's been super mean to Byron in the past when they were on Raw together. And he was an absolute gentleman on this episode. And I think, I mean, I don't care if it's a front or not, keep it up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to bring up one thing that hopefully you're okay with me bringing up.
Okay.
And if you're not, I'll just take it out of the edit of the podcast.
Okay.
But the thing that I think is interesting is that, you know, there's been times before where you and I have spoken on Facebook or whatever, and you've not particularly felt great, you know?
True.
In yourself or stuff that's been going on. But I've always said to you, and you can, you know, I'm not saying this to big me up, but I do have a point about it, is I've always said to you, if you need a week or two, mm-hmm. take it. At
yeah.
any point, you never ever have to do this. If you ever feel you need to take a week off or 2 weeks off, you do it. Your health and your well-being is more important than a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that because that's the way that I approach that, and that we all kind of here approach that kind of stuff, is that because it's so accepting and it's so kind of like cool to just be how you need to be, that actually makes you want to do the things that might otherwise make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like if you're down a bit, you know, if Mauro Ranallo is not feeling great, generally I'm sure if he had a great working environment, that would potentially make him more able or feel like he could still go. But if when he goes to work, the culture and the way that he's treated is just going to make it worse.
Right, because sometimes when I'm not feeling great, like, and I've told you this before too, and it's not something I talk about publicly all that often, not because I'm embarrassed of it or because I don't want to talk about it. I think I've just dealt with it for so long that it's just a part of my normal life. So, mm-hmm. It's not something I mind talking about at all, but when I'm in a bad place, when I'm having very bad depression bouts, which I've had plenty of recently, sometimes having something to do helps, because like doing the podcast sometimes is the thing that's like, no, I have to get out of bed today. I have to do this because I have to do the podcast. And I like doing the podcast, even if I'm super depressed and I don't like doing the podcast right now. Overall, it is a positive thing in my life, and I want that to continue. And feedback from people on Twitter and whatnot who say that they enjoy it, I'm like, no, these people are sort of counting on me and I want to do that. And then I count that as a victory. And then that helps me get through. Right? Because like, mm-hmm. I managed to do this. I managed to complete a thing. That's a victory for me. And I can use that going forward to kind of fuel me and help get better. The thing is, when I'm doing the podcast and doing the podcast with you or with David or, you know, with anyone and, you know, talking to people online, everyone is really supportive and it is a positive influence in my life. When I've taken time off of work from a job that I used to have for depression issues, it was not a positive environment at all. The human resources coordinator that I had was a nightmare, and I won't go into it, but I planned on taking 2 weeks off of work and it ended up being like 6 months. And a lot mm-hmm. of fueling that was because she was so toxic to work with, lied about me behind my back, blah, 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 blah. And it, like, going back there just made everything feel worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Because there was so much pressure. And I feel like Mauro going back to WWE at this point would just be more that type of situation where it's just worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And it reminds him of what triggered the downward spiral in the first place. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I just think it super sucks that that's the way. It seemed like they were pretty accepting at first of him taking time off, because they didn't say, like, you know, oh, he's taking time off because, you know, he's a mental weirdo or something. They said, you know, well, oh, there was a weather issue and he couldn't be there. And it's not like they fired yeah. him over it. So I appreciate that about the company. They were letting him take time off, but I think having JBL there and whatnot is just, it wouldn't be healthy for them to work together.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure to bring up, was not to use you as like a PSA for like, you
I'm
know,
fine. I'll be a
depression,
PSA.
but it's more just that way of like, I don't act that way with people with depression because, like, for, like, a business reason. But, like, my mum has seriously terrible depression, like, very bad depression through abuse that she went through as a kid. Like, abuse that if I was to tell you in this podcast, you probably wouldn't want to leave the house for the rest of the day. I've seen things that she went through. Like, I've seen it happen when I was a kid that would fuck you up on to a large degree. But the reason I bring that up is because I've been around it and I see what it does to people, and I think that when you have it, the best thing you can have is a supportive environment around you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the best things you can have. So if I can be a supportive environment, or, you know, if you have a night out or something that you're looking forward to and one of your friends cancels on you, with all rights, be like, oh, what a fucking piece of shit for canceling on me, whatever. But make sure that, like, is there something going on that's making them cancel? Like, do they have something that maybe is making them not be the best friend to you at that point they can be? Because sometimes that can happen.
Oh, depression and makes you a shitty friend. Like,
yeah, it can. It can make you a shitty friend.
It makes me a shitty friend sometimes. So that's why I say that. Because, there have been times I've had to cancel on people. There are times I don't get back to people, like phone calls and whatnot, because I just can't. And the people who understand that and the people who, they have every right to get annoyed, but the people who understand that and say, it's okay, like, I still love you, come back when you're ready, those are the people that are still in my life.
And it's funny, I'll be honest, I don't understand a lot of depression. If my mum's depressed, right, like, one of the things she's depressed about is being overweight. So I'm always like, well, we'll do this and we'll do this and, you know, blah, 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 I'll help you and da-da-da-da. But she never seems to be able to do it. Whereas I'm more of a person that I go, well, if I know that this is the stumbling block that is stopping me from getting where I want to be, I just find a way to get past the stumbling block. But I think sometimes when you have depression, it's not as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of go, well, I don't understand it, but I will try and be as cool as I can about it, even though it's not something that I personally, like, I wouldn't deal with it in that way. So it's hard for me to understand how somebody else would deal with it, if right. That makes any sense. But what I was going to say about WWE is Jim Cornette had spoken up about the issue, and he'd basically said that he was a big fan of JBL and that, you know, we need to stop kind of, you know, crying about the so-called bullying. And I think that, Jim Cornette, I think he's one of the best guys I've ever met. Not because I've worked with him, because he just is. Like, he really is a good guy. But I think he's from an era where hazing, if you want to call it that, happened a lot. And I think hazing, I don't like the word hazing, to be honest. I think pranks are fine. And, like, if you're doing pranks and they're not malicious and they're there to sort of, like, develop a bond and a whatever, then that's fine. But I don't think that JBL's, from all of the ones I've read, and ones from Justin Roberts, John Morrison, the Blue Meanie, all these different ones, none of them have read to me like him being in good spirits or fun. The Hardy Boys, they've all read like him being a colossal prick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. And it's funny to me because Jim Cornette very recently had done a podcast where he mentioned that Vince Russo made this stupid, I laugh because it's so insanely stupid, where he said that anyone who likes Kevin Owens or, like, there's another wrestler, anyone who likes Kevin Owens and another wrestler must be homosexual. Like, something about, like, must have a hint of homosexual. And, like, Jim Cornette was making fun of it, as he should. But I think the thing that maybe Cornette's not grasping on it, and it's because he's not really been around it, is, like, I wonder if Jim Cornette had been working backstage at ECW One Night Stand and had been trying to help the Blue Meanie get along and saw JBL bust him open in live pay-per-view for no reason and attack him, if he would feel the same way, because I don't think he would, because he's a better person than that. And the new thing that's come out that somebody tweeted me about, I think it was Mark Buckley. Is it Mark? I don't want to get... Yeah, Mark Buckley. He tweeted me about something that Kevin Nash had said, and he's now deleted one of the tweets, so I can't get you all of them. But basically, Kevin Nash had said in a series of tweets, I'll read out the ones that are left, JBL broke in an era of 300-pound badass men, so his psychological thoughts are very real. Everyone could go, he shifted to a new era. There was something about he likes men being men, and then JBL is one of the most thoughtful on-air personalities WWE has. He's a man's man, but always looking to advance talent. Hashtag don't be a bitch. And then he tweeted it again saying, I can only speak on my personal experiences, not on the bully. And I think that there's part of what he's saying that's right, is that if you've not seen any bad experience of somebody, then you can't really, it's hard for you to grasp that it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, to say, you know, don't be a bitch and whatever, like, I'm sorry, fuck off. Like, yeah. That's, fuck off. And I don't think Kevin Nash is a bad guy, or, like, I'm actually... Kevin Nash is my Stockholm syndrome. Like, no matter what he says, I want to be like, I'm captivated by him. And I think he's a very likable guy. I think if we sat down and had a glass of wine with Kevin Nash, we'd have a great night.
Oh, I'm
absolutely
sure.
Great. But I think that, again, what he's doing is he's defending part of the brotherhood, which is fine. But the problem, like you say, is it's from the top. It's systematic. It's Vince McMahon allowing these things to go on. And what's ironic is Jonathan Coachman, who has been spewing the WWE line, he's one of the people that JBL used to haze.
I think a lot of people just think that it's okay because that's culture and that's wrestling and it's fine. And, like, I mean, there are ribs and there are malicious ribs. And also, some people don't respond to that as well as others. Like, I'm not someone who really enjoys pranks a whole lot. And yeah, that is not an invitation to prank me, because I will just get upset. Like, I mean, if it's something little, then oh, ha ha, oh, that's funny. But like, I don't prank other people. They don't prank me. It's fine. We have a fine relationship. Some people handle it better than others. And I think that you trying to say like, oh no, it's all just funny, or it's all just a joke, like making jokes about certain things, like some people just aren't comfortable with that. And I think you have to kind of gauge your audience.
I think that's true. But what I'm trying to say is, I think if you're going into something and you're trying to be funny and you're not being malicious and it's just not worked out, is a different thing from what I think JBL does.
Yeah, I think that is different. And I've had people, you know, try and joke with me and stuff that I don't think is that funny. And like, when people say your mom jokes to me, I don't find those funny. And I always come back with, well, she's dead. So,
I know that's not, you're not lying, but it's a very good comeback.
It is. And it usually puts people in their place. And when it doesn't, and then they continue, then I'm like, you're an asshole and I don't need you in my life. But I mean, like, if it's an accident, like, if, you know, whatever, that's fine. But I've had some people who are just like, why do you get so weird about it? I'm like, because I have the right to. Fuck off. Like, you know, just that kind of thing. And like, if people apologize, like, oh, I didn't realize that makes you uncomfortable. You know, I'll try not to do it in future. That's fine. I'm not going to like hate a person for that. But it's the people who would like, and this is a weird example, but the people who would like just continue to be like, oh no, your mom's fat. And I'm like, well, she was actually before she died. It just has to do with like respecting other humans, I think, is the moral of it for me.
Well, I think for me, like, I've always been someone who, I'm not huge on how PC the world is getting. Mm-hmm. And that's just my thing. I just think it's too far. But like, I understand that there's like lines for people and things that people don't like. And that's, if like for you, right? You're not saying that your mum jokes are like, should not happen in the world.
No.
You're just saying they're not cool for you.
Just, and there's don't a difference. Say them to me.
Yeah, whereas there's a difference between you, like, if you were saying, well, that joke really offends me, so I don't think anyone should make a your mom joke in the world, that would be, like, that would be a completely different thing to say.
Yeah.
And I think that with JBL, it's like, you know, and it's funny, because on SmackDown this week, he was like an angel. He was so lovely, and like, I like part of JBL's stuff. Like, I've liked him in the past, sometimes in commentary, but like, there's so many stories. Like, Rich Brennan apparently was talking about how he was a terrible person to work with and all that sort of stuff. If somebody is that bad, like, there are stories about them. There's a reason that nobody has a bad word to say about Shane McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a very likable person.
Right.
You know? There's a reason that, like, it's funny, I've seen so many people meet Jim Cornette, and before it they've been like, his views on wrestling and da-da-da-da, and then they meet him and they're like, he's like the coolest guy ever.
And, yeah, and I mean, I disagree with most of his views on wrestling, but he was a lovely guy to me.
Yeah, but do you know what? He's happy to have a conversation with you about wrestling. He's happy to, like, you know, debate somebody on it or whatever. But I think people just take snippets of what he said and just go, oh, he's the worst. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, but if you get to know someone, that, I think with JBL, what you hear across the board is that he is a negative person. He is a bully. He is someone who hazes people. I don't know why he's got a Twitter account.
Well, I mean, the fact that he's blocking anyone who even
follows Mauro Ranallo.
Even follows Mauro Ranallo and him at the same time. Like,
I don't even know how you check that.
I have no idea. And the level of pettiness there. I mean, if he wouldn't be doing that kind of thing, then I would say, like, oh, maybe people are blowing it out of proportion. Maybe, you know, everybody's story is different. But that sort of pettiness and that sort of just, I don't know. Like, that's not a willingness to engage or even have a discussion. That's just being a dick.
And I think I think most people in WWE are quite good. I don't think it's a case of like WWE needs to be shut down. I think it's just that there are some ancient views on what's funny that need to change.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
And I think that just an examination of the culture backstage to kind of wrap this up is needed. And I hope that they take an internal look. I mean, unless it affects their sponsorship money, I doubt that they will change anything. But with it getting so much mainstream media, I'm glad that it's getting so much media so that at least they have to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's move on to SmackDown. SmackDown kicks off. We've got Byron Saxton, Tom Phillips, and JBL. One wants to face fuck you, one wants to haze you, and the other one just wants to dance. But Kevin Owens is the first one out of the gate. He is in a suit, he has shaved, he's trimmed his beard down, he looks lovely, and he is the newest member of the SmackDown roster. He's the US champion, US title's now on SmackDown. And then from there, we get Baron Corbin who comes out. He sort of sasses up to Owens. That then brings out Sami Zayn, who's the next person on SmackDown. Owens is just beside himself going, no, 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 you can't be here. That brings out AJ Styles. Huge reaction for AJ in Boston. And that leads Daniel Bryan to come out and say that, you know, Owens will defend the title against Chris Jericho at Payback. However, whoever wins that match will bring the US title to SmackDown. So, you know, if Jericho's to win, Jericho comes to SmackDown with the US title. But tonight we get a triple threat with Corbin, Styles, and Zayn to determine who will be the number one contender for Backlash in Chicago. What did you think of this opening segment and the two new additions to the SmackDown roster?
I'm excited about the two new additions to the SmackDown roster, and I loved this opening segment. Kevin Owens coming out first was really exciting, and I did not know how to process the fact that he was in a light-colored suit and had trimmed his beard. Like, that was a little bit disconcerting to me. But Kevin Owens was a proper dickhead in this segment. I mean, he was going all like, I'm from Canada, and that's better than the United States. And I was like, oh, roll my eyes, but, like, I kind of agree. And, but I thought he handled it really well in saying, like, SmackDown is now the Kevin Owens show. And I like the fact that Kevin Owens is on SmackDown. It adds a lot of star power to SmackDown, because I think that's where SmackDown has been lacking, is having, you know, proper, like, legitimate stars on it. It's had the better stories, but it doesn't have the flashier people, I guess. And I think Kevin Owens is a really good addition. I'm excited to see him mix it up with a bunch of people. Baron Corbin interrupting makes absolute sense, because Baron Corbin's a dick and he thinks it's his show, even though he, you know, just lost to Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental title, but he feels like he is owed a championship because he just beat Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental title. And, you know, he should get a shot at something. So having a shot at Kevin Owens, I was like, yeah, I want to see Baron Corbin versus Kevin Owens, even though they're both heels and it wouldn't really make any sense alignment wise, but why not? Like, I'm into it. But then when Sammy came out, it's just funny because Sammy really won't leave Kevin alone, will he? Like, they are always going to be tied at the hip. I'm kind of surprised that these two are on the same roster. I expected them to be split just because their rivalry has gone on for so long. I mean, years and years and years, if you go back to their indie stuff. But their rivalry has been happening for so long, and they've been so tied together, and they fought so many times, even just recently on Raw, that it seemed like maybe splitting them would be a better decision. So then when they come back together, eventually it'll be bigger. That said, I don't have a problem with it at all. I'm so excited to see Sami Zayn on SmackDown. That was what I really, really wanted. I wanted Sami, and I wanted Charlotte, and I wanted Emma, and I wanted Sheamus and Cesaro, and I got, like, about half of what I wanted, so I'm fine with it. but, yeah, and then AJ Styles getting in the mix with these guys. I mean, this felt like a main event-type segment, even though it's not even about the WWE World title. It's about the United States title. So I like that it feels like the United States title is super important right now and super important to SmackDown, even though SmackDown actually has a world title that's being defended as well. So I like that both titles seem important. I love the mix of all of these guys, because seeing Sami Zayn and AJ Styles interact is really cool. AJ Styles is a babyface now, right?
I think so, although at the end of this, we'll talk about, Dave Meltzer gave a breakdown of where he sees all the talent, and it's kind of one-sided in a lot of ways. I think they need another big heel on SmackDown, because you've only really got Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
At the moment. So, I don't know if, I mean, it feels like you can't really keep AJ as a heel. I just don't think the fans would buy it right now. So, I don't know who you would turn. But, yeah, like so, what he'd written down was for SmackDown.
I mean, unless they're counting Ziggler.
Yeah. Like, he announced the A baby faces. So he rated them like A minus, B and C, right?
Okay.
So I'll read them out just for the purposes of what we're talking about, right? But this is what he said. The A baby faces, AJ Styles, John Cena, Randy Orton, and Nakamura. The A heels, Kevin Owens. The A-minus babyfaces, nobody. The A-minus heels, Baron Corbin. The B babyfaces, Sami Zayn, Kane, Luke Harper, Mojo Rawley, and Ty Dillinger. The
B heels. Sami Zayn and Kane on the same level?
Well, Kane's just like on hiatus, so it's like that's where he's been put. Because that's probably where they would bring him in at. That's the level that they would probably have him at.
I don't even think he'd be that high, but okay.
It's not my personal list. So
I know.
The B heels, Dolph Ziggler, Eric Rowan, and Rusev. The C babyfaces, Sin Cara and Zack Ryder. The C heels, Aiden English and Jinder Mahal. Tag team faces, New Day and American Alpha. Tag team heels, Usos, Ascension, Shining Stars, and Breezango.
Aren't Breezango face now?
I think they did a dark match where they were baby faces. I think you're probably going to have 3-3 now with that. So you're going to have the New Day and Alpha and Breezango on the babyface side, and then the Usos, the Ascension, the Shining Stars on the heel side. For the women, the baby faces, you've got Becky Lynch, Tamina, Naomi, and Nikki Bella. And on the heel side, you've got Carmella, Charlotte, Lana, and Natalia. So there needs to be somewhere a big heel that comes in or that switches, because Owens and Corbin kind of being the only two there, it either means bringing up Ziggler to that position, which we don't want.
No.
Or Rusev expediting back, which we do want. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, have Rusev be that.
Hmm. I think he's still 2 months away from coming back, but yeah, that's what would be good. And the good thing is you have got Cena, who, like, I like to equate Cena as, like, SmackDown's Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the big part-time star. So, anyway, I like the opening segment. I think Sami and Kevin Owens are two of the best picks that could have come to SmackDown. Sami Zayn's going to feel like a much... I think he just suits SmackDown more.
Yeah, I think he's going to feel like a bigger star on SmackDown, and I think SmackDown's going to benefit from his presence. It's win-win.
Yeah, and then I think Kevin Owens could be the top heel on SmackDown for the next 12 months. And I think on Raw, he would struggle to get to that point,
mm-hmm.
just by how many people are on it. But I think that he also will thrive on SmackDown. And AJ's reaction was just great. We come back and we've got Eric Rowan in the ring and his
sparkly banjo music. I'm so excited that it's back.
We've got the banjo music. Eric Rowan's got that mask, which just looks sick. It's so good.
I love that mask so much.
Randy Orton makes his entrance. We've got Eric Rowan versus Randy Orton. It was fine. Then we get the match is going, and then we get Orton went for like the DDT thing, and then Wyatt interrupted on the Tron, said he's everywhere, he'd see Randy again very soon, and then the lights come back on.
This felt like a tease, because I was like, wait, the Wyatt sounder? Why is Bray Wyatt here? He left. I'm just processing him leaving, and now he's back, and it's like when you break up with someone, and then you have dinner with them immediately. And it's we're still having a good time, but I know that we're not together anymore, but I should maybe just be separate from you for a while and have some space. And he's not giving me space to grieve the loss of the relationship.
I knew that you would see Bray Wyatt turn up here as, like, your ex coming to collect his things.
Of course. How else am I supposed to take this?
Sandra, you take it how you take it. but when the lights come back on...
That's what Sonny said.
Many times. Eric Rowan ended up putting Orton into the ring, hitting him with the ring steps, which was a nice throwback to his stairs match that he had a few years ago with the Big Show.
I do kind of love that stairs match.
Then he drags Orton into the ring and hits a sort of full Nelson slam thing and leaves Randy Orton laying as his banjo music played. As I think if Sandra had been a man, I think she would have been erect at this point.
Absolutely. 100%. Eric Rowan stood tall over Randy Orton, which, I mean, without all of their history, is just an amazing thing for me anyway, because I love Eric Rowan and his sparkly banjo and his mask and everything about him. I mean, he's kind of shit, but I just love him. I think Nicholas Fetchman got in touch on Twitter, and I don't have the tweet in front of me, but he said, I love the music. It's kind of like Rowan, right? Like, it's a bit shit, but also beautiful. And I agree with Nicholas, and but it's also like kind of retribution for all those times that Eric Rowan like failed to scare Randy Orton. All those times Eric Rowan lost to Randy Orton when the Orton Wyatt stuff was just starting out before Eric Rowan got injured. This made my night. I was so excited. It's like, what is this beautiful show?
Sometimes I feel like I think Eric Rowan is dog shit, to be honest. But for whatever reason, I like him more. I think it's just like being around you for so long. I kind of just, it's just rubbed off that I think he's better than he is. But it's fine. Makes me enjoy him more.
I mean, I think he's gotten better in the ring. He used to be like the worst. And now he's...
Now he's like Titus O'Neil.
Yeah.
I love that you took that as a compliment. You're like, yeah!
Yeah,
like,
sure.
What? Wasn't meant to be.
Well, I mean, remember, I kind of like Titus O'Neil too, so...
Oh, for fuck's sake. Well, I'm glad you do like him, because he eliminated Luke Harper from the Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
Boo, Titus!
Up next, American Alpha had invoked their rematch clause against the Usos, but in the end, the Usos would defeat American Alpha in a 10-minute match. It was cool. It was fun. But what I want to talk to you the most about, Sondra, is post-match, as the Usos are celebrating, out of nowhere, Primo and Epico entered through the crowd and attacked American Alpha on the floor, which meant that they were two of three people on this show to appear live on Raw and SmackDown. How do you feel about the shining stars of the Caribbean being part of SmackDown Live?
I don't like living in a world where the Usos beat American Alpha clean for the titles, which, you know, fine enough, I guess, but it makes me a little sad because American Alpha were not champions for very long, and I sort of wonder what's going to become of my beloved American Alpha because it doesn't seem like they have much of an upward trajectory. But I don't like living in a world where the Usos beat American Alpha and then American Alpha are immediately beaten up by the shining stars of the Caribbean.
It's not a world that a lot of us enjoy living in, to be honest.
American Alpha are one of my favorite teams ever. I've been in love with Chad Gable since I saw him debut on NXT against Tyler Breeze. I thought, this guy's a star. This guy has it. This guy's so good at wrestling and so good at being an entertainer. And I love him. And Jason Jordan is so good, too, and such a beautiful man. And what is even happening in life right now? What is even happening in the SmackDown Tag Division? I don't understand. Like, the shining stars are not that exciting. They just aren't. Like, they're fine at wrestling, but it seems like they're not even selling timeshares anymore. They just came out and, like, just...
That seemed like a gimmick change for them. They're no longer going to be the shining stars.
But it feels like a gimmick change. It feels like it's just Primo and Epico, which is more boring than the shining stars.
Like Dolph Ziggler was talking about it on Talking Smack, they are good in the ring, but they just have never had a gimmick that's clicked yet.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is one, but if anywhere is going to find one for them, it's probably SmackDown.
Yeah, so. That's true.
That's cool. Yeah, and the Usos went in here. That was fine. I mean, I assume they're going on to feud with somebody else soon, but yeah, I think American Alpha, when they won the titles, they kind of won them relatively easily.
Well, and I don't think they were meant to win them at that point because, I mean, remember, they weren't even supposed to be the number one contenders at that point. It was supposed to be the Hype Bros, but Zack Ryder got injured. So, mm-hmm. I don't think the tag titles were going to switch that soon. I mean, unless they were going to put it on the Hype Bros, fuck's sake. But, like, I don't know.
Let's not live in that world.
Yeah, let's not live in that world either. But it makes me sad for American Alpha because they are so good and I don't think they're really clicking with the audience, but I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just been an unfortunate coming together of like time and timing and injury and story and booking and whatever else. I think the SmackDown Tag Division is in need of a resurgence and I want to see American Alpha have a good story with someone. I don't know who that would be at this point though. Like, I mean, can we just have American Alpha versus, like, I don't know, who else is even on SmackDown? Ascension? That would
no!
be good.
No, we're not. I mean, stop killing American Alpha. Put them in the fucking Ascension.
Well, maybe they can beat the Ascension. Maybe they can beat them multiple times and that would be good. I don't know. I'm at a loss because what else are we going to even do?
Ugh.
I like that I'm sick, so my voice is cracking, so it sounds like I'm crying about this. I'm not. I just...
Well, speaking of crying, Mojo Rawley versus the newest SmackDown Live superstar, Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal, who on Monday night managed to concuss Finn Balor. You fucking steroidy, veiny fuck.
I love how on Talking Smack they're like, yeah, you have the best physique. It's like, no one diets harder, no one trains harder. And you know what? That might be true, but also you are on steroids, sir.
The thing that made me laugh, though, was like, so he's on Talking Smack, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody had said to me, you know, are you going to talk about Jinder Mahal and talking smack? And I was like, I guess I need to watch it now. And I was going to watch it anyway, but I was like, I need to watch it before the podcast. And like, Jinder Mahal's like, you know, it was unfair that Rob Gronkowski got involved. And then they showed footage, which basically meant that, like, of course he was going to get involved. You shoved him and flung a glass at him or a cup. You started it.
Yeah.
And then he was kind of like, oh, yeah.
Oh, great, right. Jinder. Okay, sure. I mean, Gronkowski getting involved, he just seems to be there a lot now, right? Like, he was at WrestleMania, now he's at random SmackDown. But, I mean, was it in Boston?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense then. He's pals with Mojo. I just, this whole thing, I just don't even have that much to say, because Jinder's not that exciting. I mean, his promo, his talking on Talking Smack was actually pretty good. It's just,
he was a babyface.
Kind of shit. Yeah, he seemed like he was trying to be a babyface. Although, I guess he's been kind of a low-key babyface for a while, because when he was with Alexander Rusev, like, what was his whole deal? He wants peace and harmony in the world, so boo, you're a heel? Because you're brown? Is the only thing that I can think of?
He concussed Finn Balor. He's not a babyface.
He did concuss Finn Balor. I mean, accidents happen in the ring. I know everyone's making a really big deal out of that.
He did it, like, he hit him in the back of the head, like, 3 times.
Yeah, that was a problem.
Like, if you do it once, yeah, okay, fair enough, that's not bad. But 3 times!
I mean, he seems like he's pretty legitimately pissed off about the reactions to him online, like reactions to him being on steroids. Well, then maybe don't be on steroids, but...
Oh, no, he's 100% clean, he just diets really hard.
Right, yep, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I don't know, the whole thing, it's just, the fact that Jinder Mahal and the Shining Stars were the two acts that were on both Raw and SmackDown, like, what is this world right now?
I'm all for pushing people more and, like, giving people more feature and stuff.
Just I do hope with the Shining Stars, cute. Actually, you know what? I hope the Shining Stars do well. I hope, you know, if we get American Alpha versus the Shining Stars and that helps to rehabilitate both teams, I am all for that. And I want to give Jinder Mahal a chance, but I don't know. He's just annoying.
The sign of what you think about Jinder Mahal is Sandra got bored in the middle of her own sentence.
I did.
That's troubling. You got bored in the middle of having a sentence.
I just couldn't talk about it anymore.
So this was a rematch from the last 2 men in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which, you know, given the fact that Luke Harper, Big Show, Braun Strowman, Sami Zayn, and Killian Dane were on it, and these were the final fucking two?
Yep.
Oh, God. Anyway, Mojo beats Jinder Mahal, he fucks Gronk in the face at the end of it, and they're just...
I will say, Mojo versus Jinder made me want to cheer Mojo a little bit more.
That's like putting JBL in a match with Putin. You'd be like, okay, he's not... I hate him, but, like, it's better than Putin.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, it's not a high bar. It's
not a high bar. But Mojo is victorious, and he basically face-fucks Gronk... Whatever the fuck his name is. Gronkowski, is that his name?
Gronkowski, yeah.
And he leaped into the crowd to celebrate. I mean... Maybe I don't get it and everybody else does. I just don't get the Mojo Rawley thing. I don't get it.
I think he's become more likable recently. I think the less, like, spazzy hype he is, the more I do kind of like him. The more I do kind of like that, you know, he's passionate and that's cool. But, and I think he's gotten better. I'm at the point with Mojo right now where I'm just kind of like, yep, he's here. He's a thing. He's not for me, but it's fine.
Well, he's not for me, but it's not fine. Yeah. I'm just not prepared to accept him. I just can't handle him. He just, ugh. But you know what, like, if you listen to Classic ITR on Patreon, quick plug, patreon.com/insidetheropes, I used to hate Daniel Bryan, so.
Yeah, you really hated Daniel Bryan a lot.
I stand by, he was shite at that time.
I liked him at that time, so, I don't know.
Of course you did. If somebody ever has a spot in their career where they're, like, not being used to their fullest potential or they're being a bit shit, 9 times out of 10, that will be Sandra's favourite period of the career. It's mostly correct. But Shane McMahon comes out to talk about the state of SmackDown's women's division. He brings out all the women, Naomi, Natalia, Carmella, and Becky Lynch. And then Shane is about to introduce whoever the new SmackDown star is when James Ellsworth interrupts and calls Naomi a horrible champion. Naomi then gets in his face, and I can't remember exactly what it was she said, but it made me laugh a lot, and it made me really want to see Naomi against James Ellsworth for some reason.
Yeah, it really made me want to see Naomi just, like, wipe the floor with James Ellsworth, which she totally could.
Mm-hmm. She was great here. When Naomi's being, like, pressured or, you know, like, somebody's kind of getting up in her grill, she responds very well.
She does. I've become a lot more of a Naomi fan lately. And not just because of her entrance. Like, her entrance is cool, but I think her work on the mic and her work in the ring have gotten better significantly. And I think, like, as much of a doubter as I was, I guess, I'm actually kind of into Naomi as champion right now.
Yeah, I like her. Poppers aside. Shane said that the new superstar joining SmackDown was a second-generation superstar, daughter of a champion and a WWE Hall of Famer, Tamina.
What a troll move, right? I felt kind of bad for Tamina because, you know, as Shane is saying this, everyone's like, oh good, it's Charlotte. Of course it's Charlotte, because Charlotte's coming, right? Like, we all thought Charlotte was coming. And then he's introducing it this way, and then it's Tamina. And then there's just no reaction for Tamina because everyone's like, oh, you're not who we wanted. And
do you think there's any situation where Tamina coming out would have got people going wild?
I mean, not necessarily, no. But I think this was the situation where, like, that was for sure not going to happen. So I just felt kind of bad for her. Because, I mean, she basically was introduced as, like, a swerve joke before Charlotte actually came out. Tamina, I've never been a big fan of Tamina's wrestling because it's very bad.
I like her as a bodyguard.
I like her as a bodyguard. I'm curious to see. I mean, maybe she'll get better because it's not like she's had all that much opportunity to get better either, right? Like, she's not really done that much in terms of wrestling. And she came up and was trained in an era where women did not get a chance to really improve and train and have great matches.
In saying that, to kind of play devil's advocate, Beth Phoenix came in an era when it was bra and panties, and she still managed to get great.
True.
And have great matches. And, like, I want to say this in the most PC way possible, only because if I don't say it this way, people are going to think I'm an absolute cretin. Tamina is not a typical attractive diva.
No.
Like, she's not that sort of traditional. But I've met her in person. She's actually very pretty. Like, it's not that I'm trying to shit on her or anything. But the thing with Tamina is Tamina was never going to be the Raw magazine cover girl.
No.
So she should have known all along that she would have to get good in the ring for people to want to continue using her. And she's just not got that much better. But I would like to see her deck and put out of commission James Ellsworth and be Carmella's bodyguard.
Actually, that could be really cool. I could see them as a good team. So, did you put Tamina on the babyface side when you were reading your list?
Meltzer did?
Well, yeah, Meltzer's list. That's interesting, because I guess we don't really know if she's babyface or heel yet, because we didn't really see anything from her. And that's my problem with this segment, is it was fairly anticlimactic. We didn't even get a women's match on this show. Which is similar to the first SmackDown, you know, the first draft or the first episode of SmackDown. We didn't really get a whole lot. We just got a promo train. I'm not going to, like, be railing and be so upset about it because we didn't get it on one episode. It just seems to be like, all right, well, here's the women's division. Normal processes, I hope, resume next week. Because SmackDown, the reason the SmackDown women's division has been so good is because there were good stories and there was good character and, you know, decent wrestling. No, like, classic matches were really happening in the SmackDown women's division. I think we have the chance for classic matches now that Charlotte and Becky Lynch are both there. I think that's excellent. I'm really excited about that. I'm excited to see Charlotte versus Naomi, too. I think that could be a really good match. So I think there are options for a lot better matches now. The divisions feel a little bit more even, in a way. But for Raw to get Alexa Bliss and Mickie James from SmackDown and then to just bring in Tamina? But I guess I'll reserve judgment until we see more. The segment just didn't do a lot for me in the sense of, all right, here they are. There you go. Okay. But what I do like is that they treated Charlotte like a big fucking deal coming over to SmackDown.
See, it's funny. I actually really liked the segment. All In, I thought it was, because for me it was, I thought it was more impactful to not have a women's match on this show, because what I liked about it was they were kind of saying, right, okay, the women's division as a whole, you know, we've lost two of our big female stars. How are we going to bounce back from that? So we're going to have a big segment where Shane McMahon comes out, he addresses the state of the division on SmackDown at the top of the hour, because that's the most important time, and then, you know, how do we bring Tamina back? Well, we can, we, you know, she's also a second generation daughter of a champion. We can bring her out. It's like in 2007, before the Battle of the Billionaires match, they did a thing where they were going to announce the guest referee.
Okay.
Which was Steve Austin. But at first, they bring out Eric Bischoff. And he comes out, and it turns out he's just there to shout at Vince McMahon. They bring out Mick Foley. Turns out he's just out there to give Vince McMahon a piece of his mind. They bring out Shane McMahon, who Vince wanted as the referee, but Shane was saying to him kind of, you know, off mic, but it was obviously picked up, the board voted 5-4, we lost. And Vince was like, who's the referee? And then the glass shatters at Stone Cold. So they did all this thing to build up Stone Cold. So to me, I'm happy to use Tamina as the fodder for the Charlotte introduction. And that's where I thought it was going. So I think that for me, what I liked about it was this whole segment was made to be like, well, the division is hurt because of the people that left, but we're now going to bring in the biggest women's star in the company and the biggest women's star in wrestling today, and she's going to make everything better, which will then, I think, parlay into storylines where Charlotte can be like, listen, girls, I'm here to make things better because I am the queen and you're not. And then everybody can kind of aim to prove her wrong and,
right,
you know, go against. So for me, I thought it was built up really well. And then Shane obviously comes back in. And he's like, I think you were thinking of somebody else. Now, maybe having this in Boston in Sasha Banks' hometown was not the best move because everybody was chatting Sasha because that's her hometown. Of course, they're going to chat Sasha. But
right,
as soon as he introduced Charlotte, the Sasha thing just died away and everybody was like, oh, fuck, it's Charlotte. And they were all, you know, she got a great reaction. She comes out, she poses, she leaves. So for me, the segment was a success, but I do understand your trepidation and what it could mean or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't really click that much for me, but I don't think it's a sign of doom and gloom. It's not like the women's promo train on SmackDown Summary Episode 1 where I was so, so upset because I thought that it was, like, indicative of them just hating everybody and da-da-da-da-da. Like, I feel like going into WrestleMania, the women's division didn't have a good story because it was just building to the six-pack challenge, which, you know, I was kind of down on. And not that I was down on the match happening, but just the lack of story is frustrating for a SmackDown women's division that had three complete, fully formed, fully reasoned women's matches at Elimination Chamber. And I think if normal processes can resume next week and if we can start building stories and building feuds and having new interactions, I think it's good. I think the division looks good. I'm curious to see what Lana brings to it. I know you're going to mention her later, but
I think she's good. What I read from Meltzer was that Lana is essentially going to become Emelina.
That's kind of what it seems like. I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, you know, Lana Lena. And yeah, fine. I mean, she's probably going to wrestle, so she'll be a heel.
Do you know what, though? The good thing about this is Lana, and I don't mean any disrespect to Emma, but Lana's going to suck it up and do the best she can with the gimmick. And I think Lana can get it over.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to be the key is to her success. Because, like, Emma's a better wrestler than Lana.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's always held Emma back is, like, and I know you love her, and I do like her, so I'm not shitting on her, but, like, Emma's never really clicked in the main roster. For a variety of reasons. I don't think they found the right gimmick for her.
Well, I think she was starting to click on the main roster, and then she got injured right away.
Yeah, the Dana Brooke thing was, like, the most that she had clicked so far. But even then, I don't think that she was of the level of, like, a Charlotte. Like, I fully believe Charlotte. I believe everything about her. I think she thinks she's the queen and all that sort of stuff because she's so good at portraying that character. Sasha Banks, I believe that she thinks she's the boss and da-da-da. Bailey, I believe that she's this naive little girl that managed to fulfill her dream. I don't believe Emma. But so far, the Lana that I saw in this, I kind of believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's what's going to make her go far because you need to be able to believe what you're seeing to get anywhere. And I think that having a character like Lana or Lana Lena or Emelina or Eva Marie or whatever it is good to have one of those characters because one of my favourite matches of I think it was early 2016, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, was that Bailey-Eva Marie
Bailey
match.
The Bailey-Eva match, yeah. I can't remember if it was, yeah, I don't remember exactly when that match was, but it was excellent. It was really good.
One of my favorites. So we'll see where it goes.
And I think with Eva Marie not coming back, it seems, right? Like, I think if Lana can kind of take up that mantle, then that's fine with me, because I think Eva Marie had a place on the SmackDown roster.
And I think from what we've seen of Lana and her limited matches, she was as good as Eva Marie was, if not better. So
right.
Give it a couple of years, I'm sure she'll be really good. Sin Cara's moved to SmackDown. Any thoughts?
I guess they don't want to have the Lucha Dragons on the same show, and... fine.
Rusev's coming to SmackDown!
Yay!
Oh, the whole 2 nights were worth it for this.
I'm so excited.
He's going to be so good on this show.
He is. Oh, he could actually become one of the top heels on this show, and I believe that he could actually do it on SmackDown, like with the culture of SmackDown and how they build it. I mean, look what they did for Baron Corbin, and Rusev's so much better than Baron Corbin.
Prediction now, if Rusev stays on SmackDown for the next 2 years, I think he becomes WWE champion.
I think he might. Yes! I think it's possible.
So excited.
I'm so excited too.
My Ruru is going to be featured again.
Yay!
And there's no Roman Reigns to kill him. Yay!
Yay!
That takes it to Aiden English.
What do you think
ring.
About Lana and Rusev being separate?
I think it's probably a good decision for now, because I think that Rusev is such a big character and such a sort of like big part of the show that like she would always kind of be his background.
Mm-hmm.
So like I don't think they're going to be completely split. I think they're going to be more like Dean and Renee.
Yeah.
They're on the same show and we know they're together, but like Lana's role is no longer being Rusev's wife.
Yeah. I like it. I think that's good. Personally, I think it's good. And I think that if they can do that sort of dynamic, like even if she does still accompany him sometimes, like Carmella did with Enzo and Cass, but she also wrestled her own matches and did her own thing. I think I like it. I like the direction going forward. I'm kind of curious to see how it all plays out.
Aiden English decided to sing before his match with Ty Dillinger.
He sang and he called for a spotlight and everything. And then there was singing and he even sang mid-match and it was the best thing ever.
Tell us very quickly, because we're under a little bit of time constraint here. Aiden English, he did sing in NXT before the Vaudevillains. What's
yes,
his name?
Yes, he was the artiste, Aiden English. That was his first actual gimmick when he wasn't a jobber. So what he would do is he would say, you know, spotlight, please. And, you know, he would come out and he would sing a song to the ring. And I'm not even going to try to sing something right now because that's just not going to work. But it was great because William Regal would always stand up and clap and throw roses at him. So it's kind of like a Broadway singer gimmick and whatnot. And I love the artiste Aiden English. I was kind of bummed that he had to face Ty Dillinger here because it was just sort of a battle for my heart. And I kind of want Aiden English to be a little more featured than just the guy who loses. But even if he has to be the guy who loses, at least he's singing again and at least he's Aiden English again. And this did my heart so much good.
Ty Dillinger got the victory. Good to see Ty getting a feature here on SmackDown. So it'll be interesting to see who he feuds with on the blue brand. We got an AJ Styles video package, which was great. I liked the video packages on this show. They were fun.
It made the main event feel like a really big deal, and it made everyone in the main event feel like a really big deal.
Yeah, because we got a Baron Corbin one, I think, earlier in the show?
Yeah.
Was it later?
Yep.
Yeah, it
I
was
don't
earlier.
Remember when it was, but it happened.
And that was also good. So then we get a video for Lana, like we were talking about. We kind of discussed it now, but basically Lana's come to SmackDown Live. She was introduced separately. It's still not very clear whether she's going to still be with Rusev or not, but they're on the same brand, and she seems like she's going to get a push. Because Vince always liked Lana. Like, the plan was for Lana to become, like, the next Sable.
Yeah.
And then they decided to put her with Dolph Ziggler, which was the kiss of death.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued by where she goes and where Rusev fits in when he gets back. Dolph Ziggler comes out. And he's saying, you know, the question in everybody's mind is what's going to happen to Dolph Ziggler? That was the question in your mind, Sandra, right?
No, the question was, why are you still here?
He said he's staying right here on SmackDown.
Yay.
Dolph said that, you know, Raw superstars are going to try and, you know, shine on SmackDown now. And, you know, SmackDown's his show and blah, 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 blah. And then Nakamura's music hits. He comes out. Everyone sings his song. The thing about Nakamura was I was always kind of worried about the second week that he came out because, you know, the post-WrestleMania crowd are very different to the average crowd.
Right.
But this entire crowd were singing his song. And he gets in, he smiles at Ziggler, he's got the mouth guard in, the crowd are chanting for him. Dolph said, you know, who are you? and the crowd chanted Nakamura, and he just didn't say a thing. It was fucking glorious.
It was perfect. It was so perfect. Nakamura didn't even need to say a word at that point, because the crowd knew who he was, obviously. I mean, Dolph Ziggler should know who he is, too, because he wrestled him last week, but that was in, you know, alternate universe dark match land. But, yeah, the crowd being so behind Nakamura is excellent. I think Nakamura looks like a fucking star. He looks way more like a star, and he feels a lot more exciting now, having come to SmackDown, than he has felt in NXT for a while.
Because he fits here.
Because he fits here. Yeah.
You didn't believe him in NXT. Like,
no.
He's the same as Balor. Like, it wasn't that you didn't like seeing him in NXT. They were great for NXT. And they elevated NXT for a long time. But, like, after a while, you're kind of like, when they both became champion, you're like, it's kind of time for them to go.
Yeah.
Because they're done. They've elevated past everything.
Like, so, he felt bigger than NXT, and also, like, he was holding NXT back a little bit because it was in his shadow. And now he's... I don't know. He shines here. And so I was a little hesitant about Nakamura on SmackDown, just because I was like, I don't know. He seems more like a Raw guy. He seems like he's, you know, flashy and whatnot. But maybe I just have to accept SmackDown needs a little bit of that too. SmackDown needs a little bit of that star power. SmackDown needs a little bit of that charisma and that flash and everything. And
Nakamura
has it in spades. Oh my gosh.
So he then tells Dolph Ziggler who he is. His name is Nakamura. And then the crowd are still chatting. Dolph goes for a super kick, but Nakamura shoves him away and sort of, like, you know, goads him to, like, try again, and Ziggler leaves. I want to see this now. And I mean, I know we saw it last week in a dark match, but I think this is a good first feud for him.
I think it's a good first feud for him, too. And, I mean, Dolph Ziggler is kind of that gatekeeper, right? Like, you come in and you beat Dolph Ziggler, and that's what you do, and you'll have a really good match, because Dolph Ziggler will give you a really good match, so I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to Nakamura just being a big, huge star that I can actually get behind, finally.
And...
his NXT farewell, by the way, was actually very nice. I know you saw it, but...
Oh, having... Finn was there!
Having Finn there and everything, yeah, I watched it last night, it was beautiful.
I've not watched it yet on TV, so I don't know how much you saw of this, but, like, Asuka was dancing to his song, it was so cute.
Yeah, they did show the people on the ramp some, and I don't know, it was very nice, it was a very nice moment.
And all I've got to say is, like, Nakamura Kevin Owens, Nakamura John Cena, Nakamura Randy Orton, Nakamura AJ Styles...
Nakamura Sami Zayn the rematch.
All of
these things are possible right now.
Nakamura Luke Harper.
Oh my gosh.
There's all these matches that could be really great. So, and you know what? The thing with Nakamura is, I think for a lot of his NXT time, and I don't even blame him for this, I don't think he was on full speed.
No, not at all. He seemed just kind of held back a lot.
Now, obviously, I'm a casual New Japan viewer, so probably David will be screaming saying, no, tell him about this match. But, like, if you watch the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom match with AJ Styles, he's not had a match close to that on NXT. Because he's never had to, really. Like, his stuff with Joe and his stuff with Finn and the stuff with Sammy was good, but, like, he was still not on full speed. So I feel like, now that he's in front of packed arenas and he's on, you know, television with millions of people watching, I feel like this is where he belongs and he's going to up his game a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I hope he does. We are given our final SmackDown Live new participants. It's the New Day! They're coming to SmackDown.
That's actually pretty exciting. I mean, they've done everything they can do on Raw, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm really, 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 really hoping we get New Day versus American Alpha sometime. Like, I know they're both babyfaces and the alignments don't make sense, but can you imagine Biggie Langston and Jason Jordan having suplex battles?
It'd be lovely.
It'd be so good. And I mean, I know Kofi Kingston's injured right now, which sucks, but at least, I mean, there's still Biggie Langston and Xavier Woods to carry the New Day mantle. And I'm excited to see them mix it up. And I think it's a breath of fresh air that the SmackDown division needs. And I think the New Day needed to get away from Raw, where they were feeling kind of stale.
Yes. And I loved that he sent a tweet about Biggie had said he's mostly excited about being on Talking Smack so he can let the expletives fly.
I'm excited about that too, because unscripted Biggie Langston is the best Biggie Langston. Like,
there's also a great tweet where he put a picture of him and Sasha Banks with "How do I say goodbye?" and they both are, like, got their legs in the air. It's great. I think you know, David and I had this debate once. Remember that time I really needed the toilet and he wouldn't let me go for like half an hour.
Yeah.
Like, I do still think that the New Day were kind of shit on Raw points. I liked them for points. I didn't like them at other points. But I think SmackDown is more their show because I think they'll be forced to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm into it.
And they won't have to fill hours of time. Like, they won't be forced to have these, like, 10-minute promo segments because SmackDown's only 2 hours, which, again, the format of the show makes a big difference in how they present things.
For sure. We get a video package in Sami Zayn, which made him look like $1 million. It was great.
Loved it.
Main event, AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin. They go, like, almost 20 minutes. It was very, very fun to watch.
Yeah, I loved it.
I don't think I'll be talking about it in, like, a year, but I don't think that was really the intent of it. This was, like, kind of like, here's what these guys can do. Like, here's just a taster of what they can all do together. And Baron Corbin, like, he held his own in this match. He really did.
I think Baron Corbin has gotten pretty good at what Baron Corbin does. I mean, it's not like he was doing most of the moves, but that's not his role to do most of the moves. And when he pulls out a really good move, like when he does the deep six, it looks fucking phenomenal. So, I don't know. I liked the dynamic that the three of them had. And seeing AJ Styles and Sami Zayn wrestle just in the main event of SmackDown, it was glorious. It was glorious as Baron Corbin's there to be a dick about everything. I don't know. It was kind of my dream come true.
Yeah, seeing AJ Styles and Sami Zayn trade blows was great. And you know, like, what this did really well was there was numerous times where somebody would break up a pin that you were like, oh, fuck! You know, like, when Styles hit Corbin with a springboard 450 and Sami had to break it up. And it was built very well to a good crescendo.
Yeah,
and
it was AJ an effective Styles triple threat in that way. It wasn't just, like, someone lying on the outside forever so two people can wrestle and then another person lying on the outside forever.
And, like, at the end when, you know, Corbin took the Helluva kick and then Sami turned into the phenomenal forearm. Oh!
So good.
So good. So AJ Styles is victorious, so now we're going to get at Backlash on May 21st in Chicago, the US title, Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles.
I am so excited. Well, I mean, unless Chris Jericho beats him, we're getting AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens. I'm so excited. Like, I'm tempted to try to go to Backlash. I don't know if I can afford it after all of, you know, WrestleMania expenditures and everything. But I really, really want to go to this show because it's going to be so good. Like, I really want to see that match. AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens is something that I'm excited about all the new possibilities for SmackDown. Like, this is a match that we could not have had before this week, right? And a lot of the possibilities that we have now with the SmackDown roster, I'm really excited going forward. So to everyone saying, like, oh, how about that ITR draft, Sandra? Like, don't you want the draft because Bray Wyatt and Miz left? I'm going to miss Bray Wyatt a lot. I'm going to miss The Miz a lot. But I'm getting Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Charlotte and The New Day, and I'm really excited about the possibilities, and I think all the new matchups make this really just, I don't know, it's a very exciting time for me. Whereas after the last draft, I was ready to, you know, throw it all in and be very dramatic and be in a huff about everything. I'm so looking forward to the new possibilities and the new storytelling, because let's be honest, a lot of the feuds on SmackDown have run their course. They were kind of running out of options. So I think this happened at a good time.
Where's your thumb for this show?
Thumbs up. I mean, even though I had Mojo versus Jinder, which was terrible, overall, this was a good show.
Yeah, I think that this SmackDown is now in much better shape than it was last July when we thought they couldn't do anything with it. So
the rosters feel more even to me. I don't know how it comes across to you, but it feels like SmackDown has a lot more star power right now.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that it feels relatively even. SmackDown feels like SmackDown still, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, SmackDown feels like the workhorse show, whereas Raw is the flashy show, and I think that's good. And I think that, like, for the most part, like, I'll do this very, very quickly, but, I think SmackDown is in great shape. And I think we're at the same point we were last year, where SmackDown is going to take, like, 4 or 5 people who weren't maybe being featured as well as we would like them to be, like a Sami Zayn or a Rusev or whatever, and they're going to become bigger on SmackDown. So
yeah.
I think it's a good thing. But, like, you can kind of pick who's who. Like, you can kind of trade everybody off against each other. So, like, Kevin Owens was traded. Like, Miz and Maurice, they were traded for, like, Rusev and Lana.
Mm-hmm.
Jinder Mahal was traded for Curt Hawkins. Primo and Epico were traded for Heath Slater and Rhino. Kalisto was traded for Sin Cara. Sami Zayn was traded for Dean Ambrose. Apollo Crews was traded for The New Day, so SmackDown kind of got a good deal there. Charlotte and Tamina's kind of for Alexa and Mickey, even though Tamina was kind of there already. And we get Kevin Owens as well. So it kind of, SmackDown feels like it did better in this split.
I think it does.
Owens for Wyatt. Owens for Bray Wyatt. So it's kind of like an even split for the most part. So I think it's good. I think it was really effective. And big thumbs up for me on this show. I think that Payback becomes more interesting because there's some kind of last things that are going to happen. You know, you get the Randy Orton Bray Wyatt thing, which has got one SmackDown guy on it and one Raw guy. You get Owens and Jericho, which is the same. They're a little bit more interesting because of that, even though it's kind of obvious outcomes, but it's more interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, patreon.com/insidetheropes for more content. We'll have a new classic ITR up and a new interview up tomorrow as well. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
So that's it from us. We'll be back this weekend with the Retro Raw Rundown of a terrible, terrible episode.
I tried to watch it yesterday and...
So fucking bad.
I got so half an hour bad. In and needed to stop. I can't watch this all in one go.
This is one of the worst weeks, without question. Anyway, we'll be back with that if Sandra's not quit beforehand. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Rusev Udria! Rusev Machka!